Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
All right, let's get this show on the road. It's 107. Hi, it's John. I'm in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue.
Lord have mercy.
Appreciate you tuning in. We're here all the way until 3 o'clock. It's not a real long show, but we pack a lot of big thoughts into it. Some little thoughts as well. Still waiting the beginning of this press conference, the daily White House press briefing. It'll be interesting to see how the Sean Spicer show goes today. Well, with the shakeup in part and his communications team and all the presidents, and for that matter, his return now from his trip to Europe. It was funny because while the president was there, everybody was pleased, or at least noting, but probably pleased too, the president's absence from Twitter. When he would tweet, it was boilerplate stuff, promotional and positive, and not that much. As soon as he touched ground, he started firing off on the fake news and the media, and he's still angry at Democrats who are still angry. He says that they lost the election, and he just has been back to form. And while he was gone, people like Rick Santorum and John McCain and his team have been saying if he tweets less, then everything goes better. But he's the man, and he is not going to be told no. He's a petulant president that way. And so he immediately has just been firing off. I got up this morning. I do what I always do, lying there under the covers, my phone to my side, where it's, they say, not supposed to be. You should have your phone some distance from your bedstand, but I keep mine near me, and I get up in the morning, bleary-eyed, sometimes with my glasses on, sometimes with them off, and I just pull my phone to my nose. See if I got any texts or important tweets overnight, but invariably I then type in D-O-N. I'm pre-populating my Twitter feed as the president's account, and then I see what he tweeted. And the last couple of weeks, it's not been that eventful, but boom, there was my morning wake-up call. Lots of swell tweets, or at least tweets to form. So how is this all going to play out now? I think this Jared Kushner case is really intriguing because while everybody is saying, aha, see, more of that, I don't see that much more of that there. It's more bad guidance. It's more hubris on the presidential transition team. But everybody that follows the Jared Kushner story says that, in fact, no back channel of communication ever was established, that no information was communicated. And it's not even clear if it was the Russians' idea first or the president's son-in-law. So while that doesn't look like good judgment, I think that's kind of all you've got on this story. I'm sure that the assembled press will ask differently, but that's just kind of the conclusion I've come to. Steve Bertrand's in the newsroom, and we're talking a little bit in the halls about this today, Steve. That's kind of where I am, sitting on the Kushner story over the weekend.
Well, you have to wonder who he wanted to keep the communication secret from.
Right.
And it seems to be U.S. intelligence agencies.
Sure. Why? I mean, right. If you wanted to have a back channel, which they say they have had before, you don't do that in complete private.
And you don't do it with your enemy's communications devices. You do it on your own your enemy, maybe, but you don't, or adversary.
Yeah. So I'm kind of curious.
But you don't rely on their walkie-talkie.
While I'm intrigued by what his motive was and how that would have gone down, it didn't go down. So, I'm not sure. I think all you have is smoke here, but no fire. The gun never materialized. So Mr. Spicer,
Europe and the Middle East, and interacted with
just stepped up to the microphone.
Leaders. It was an unprecedented first trip abroad, just 4 months into this administration, and it shows how quickly and decisively the president is acting to strengthen alliances.
So Sean's going to go on for a while like that, and then he'll also probably talk about the president's day, the next 24, 48 hours. That's typically what they do. And then he'll ask questions and then get that sour look on his face. And we'll see what the media asks, the assembled media there, in a little bit as this story moves along. The other text that I got last night was from my son, yesterday afternoon. He said, was it this morning? He said, wow, did you see the Bryce Harper fight? Did you see the Bryce Harper fight?
Yeah.
He takes a 98-mile-an-hour fastball on his hip that was intended for his hip, and he storms the mound.
He can throw a pitch, but not a helmet.
He can't. I had a better chance of hitting that guy than he did with the helmet. Not clear at this point is whether or not the throwing of the helmet was sort of a shot across the bow, or did he intend to hit him? I think that's the big question here. Mark Harmon's going to join us a little later on to talk about this incident. I'm kind of intrigued what the penalty should be in a situation like that. Like, what's worse? Pretty much everybody knows that guy threw a baseball 98 miles an hour at him and didn't, you know,
miss
him. Well,
he had to make sure it got there. He couldn't throw it at 60. He might have bounced in.
Excuse me, your point is what?
Well, you keep making a big deal of the 98.
Boy, did that look painful. Pow! And, like, it's... Harper's a big guy, and he's got some girth, and he hit him in the backside, so it's not like he hit him in the nose or in the elbow.
It was the nicest pitch you could throw in
right.
that manner.
If you're going to hit somebody at 98, that's the sweet spot. But that courtesy that was extended to Bryce Harper seemed to be lost on him as he charged the mound, threw his helmet, missed wildly, and then you know how baseball fights never really are baseball fights? It's just a bunch of guys pushing each other around saying, hey, I don't want to get injured. I don't want to get injured either. Well, then don't hit me. Well, then I won't hit you. That's a baseball fight. This was a fight. This was a, I'm going to hit you on the nose as hard as I can, and then I'm going to hit you on the nose as hard as I can. And those punches landed. Somewhere in the owner's box at the stadium, both teams' owners were like, oh, my God. That man is worth $200 million to our organization, and he's going to go out for a year with a broken fist in a baseball fight. I don't know if you pull the athlete aside after the game and say, listen, we appreciate your tenacity. We know how strongly you feel, and you really want to win. But, dude, you will be no value to us if you make that point with your fist, and then you're out for the season.
And the pitcher seemed to be a little more unhinged than Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I know. Well, the pitcher, I think, is in the wrong. I mean, who started this? The pitcher did. You're really upset because...
No, Bryce Harper started it by hitting a couple home runs off him.
Right. I mean, you know, really, that's just kind of weak stuff. You know, if you're really mad at him for taking you yard a couple times, although in one of the instances, Harper looked at him as he was circling the bases, and I guess that's bad form, and that's not lost on the baseball insiders. But another way to make your point would be to strike him out. Why don't you throw some pitches over the plate, and then he'll miss them, and then you'll go na-na-na-boo-boo. You've got that if you want it. But that's not how the game is played at this level.
I think it's a lost art, though. I mean,
the baseball fight?
Not the hitting people once in a while. Don't you think? It used to be part of the game a little bit more.
Yeah. I don't know. Did they used to throw 98?
Okay, 82. It would hurt a little less.
Oh, I think it would. I think you could also get out of the way of an 82.
Well,
why does Javi Baez wear a little mouth guard around his chin? He said that he and other players who are starting to wear those say the guys throw too hard. Just it's dangerous.
Okay, but this guy just got plunked for showing him up after hitting a home run.
Okay, so you really do think that the bad guy in that story or the initiator of this is Bryce Harper?
I think it's part of the used to be more part of the game
that I would.
I think a lot of players wouldn't have reacted the way Bryce Harper did either. I mean, did he really show him up when he hit the home run?
I haven't seen the video lately. I don't remember exactly what that trot was like. But
did you just notice Buster Posey just kind of hung out behind home plate?
Well, I also noticed that when they separated, the one guy with protective gear is like, you know what? Y'all fight amongst yourselves.
Right. I'm not doing that. I broke my leg a few years ago. I'm not doing this.
Well, that's it. This is why I don't know who I can relate to an owner of a major league sports franchise. I'm a billionaire, right? I can't relate to any of these people. But I often think in terms of, this is why Brendan and I haven't bought a franchise yet. Because I thought, if I'm paying these knuckleheads,
Dairy Queen,
millions, I haven't even bought a Long John Silver's, because I don't want to be paying these knuckleheads all that money, and then they get all jazzed up, and the next thing you know, I go, well, hon, I guess we're not going to win a championship for the next few years because our star player just threw a punch,
right?
Or was out on an ATV, Baumgarten from San Francisco. You know, he hit, two home runs on opening day? He's a pretty good pitcher. San Francisco was counting on him. What happens? He's on an off day doing some extracurricular activity and gets injured, and he's out for the bulk of the season. All right. You idiots. You idiots, don't you people know that when you are 20-something years old and somebody is willing to pay you millions of dollars to do some singular thing for half a season, that you should sort of treasure that opportunity? Because you're not going to be young forever, you're not going to have that talent forever, and it's only half a year that you have to do it. So don't go riding ATVs, and don't go punching people, even though you're angry. I believe in Harper's head, though. He also knew this is part of the show. It's sort of like that is going to be replayed a million times, and people are going to love it. It's part of the entertainment package that athletes provide us. These volatile, super strong, super stud people. On the CBS Morning News today, when they showed the clip, Gayle King turned to Nora and Charlie and she said, "Wow, has he got great hair?" He's just an all-star package. He's fun to look at, he's fun to watch, and he can fight.
So was he trying to hit him with the helmet? Because it was wildly off. I think he was.
I've Zapruder'd the whole thing.
Yeah.
At first I thought, oh my God, he's missing him for show. On further review, I think he was trying to hit him.
Yeah,
and it got away from him early.
I don't think he was thinking, like, I'm going to pretend to hit him and then throw it toward first base instead. I think
he
got away.
This language on migration and refugees was a major shift in policy towards the shift of the president. The G7 formally...
Steve, it sounds like Sean is still in just reading from the notes mode. We haven't gotten to the...
The president's leadership was critical in setting those priorities for the nation.
It's the delay. I mean, you know, you do this... We all do it, I guess, but...
No, I think you're right. The Times Spicer has made this part longer because he's just lengthening his own life. He knows that when he stops reading and starts taking questions, his life is going to get worse.
Deliver and, another strong message about the...
Union. Yeah, he's just reading right now.
And then Nancy said the sluggo.
All right. It's 1:19. We'll pause here, and then perhaps the Q&A portion will begin. It should almost any moment now. So now the questions have begun.
Russian government, and if he didn't know at the time, when did he find out?
I think that assumes a lot, and I would just say that Mr. Kushner's attorney has said that Mr. Kushner has volunteered to share with Congress what he knows about these meetings, and he will do the same if he's contacted and connected with any other inquiry.
Did the president discuss it, though?
I'm not going to get into what the president did or did not discuss, but what your question assumes is a lot of facts that are not substantiated by anything but anonymous sources that are so far being leaked out.
Does he approve of that action?
You're asking if he approves of an action that is not a confirmed action. That being said, I think Secretary Kelly and General McMaster have both discussed that in general terms, back channels are an appropriate part of diplomacy.
So does the White House dispute that happened?
I'm not going to get into it, but your question presupposes facts that have not been confirmed. Francesca.
Thank you, Sean. Did the president retweeted this morning an article about that back channel that was based on an anonymous source that said that there was an effort to set up a back channel, that it was the Russians who suggested that, and that it was to talk about Syria. Was the president not confirming that effort, that there was an effort, and the facts that I just said?
I think what I just said speaks for itself.
But you said that the article was based on anonymous sources.
Which it is.
But the Fox article that the president retweeted was also based on anonymous sources. Why are those sources, or the source rather, that they used more credible than the ones in the Washington Post article?
Again, I don't think there's two issues at hand. One is the statement that Jared's attorney has provided. Second is whether or not the dossier that is largely the basis of this was largely discredited in the first place. Most of the publications here refused to even publish it in the first place. So again, I'm not going to get into confirming stuff. There's an ongoing investigation. John. Gizzy.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Sean. I have two questions. First, the president, for the second time in a month, retweeted his desire for the Senate to reduce the votes to pass anything to 51, which would effectively scuttle the filibuster for legislation as it has been scuttled for nominations. Is this something he discussed with Majority Leader McConnell or any of the Senate leadership before he tweeted it?
I think the concerns that he's had with the pace of the Senate has been longstanding. Obviously, the use of the filibuster and the rules of the Senate are ultimately up to Senator McConnell.
So we'll be listening in and out of the Sean Spicer Daily White House Press Briefing. You can see the first two questions were about that. and they were very much about that, but Sean is very much not going to talk that much about that. Won't keep him from asking, though, so we'll continue to monitor that and keep you posted in the news. It's 1:24 to continue. Here's the deal. He's real. He's trusted. He's Larry Potash. Watch Larry and the rest of the WGN Morning News team weekdays from 4 to 6, from 4 to 10 on Chicago's very own WGN-TV. It's also 1:25. Gene, this is John.
Hi, it's Gene.
Hi, Gene. You're on the air. What can I do for you?
Hi. Well, I called to tease you about the pork steak for brains in the 17-year-olds, and so when you had sons that age, and I know you loved them, and I'm sure they turned out to be as good as my sons did, but it is funny. I think that they used to say the 30s are the new 20s. Well, I think, you know, even when they're young adults and in their 20s, they don't realize what they're being paid. They don't understand that it is a responsibility to not do stupid things.
Yeah, right.
And I think more and more it's running in the female species to a lesser extent. It's really crazy. And I have to laugh every time you put on one of the press secretaries in a short, you know, snippets. I have never felt so sorry for anyone in my life. Of course, he's being paid for it.
I kind of do. You know, I have had a long-running conversation with one of my sons about this, Gene, and thank you for recollecting my observation over the years that young men are born with brains that are 80% pork steak and 20% cartilage. And as they mature, those numbers reverse themselves, but that's all they've pretty much got. And Bryce Harper is perfect proof of that. But one of my sons and I have had a long-running kind of disagreement about how pathetic Sean Spicer is. I feel some compassion for him and think that he has a job to do. And it is, you know, we see Sean Spicer as this dishonorable creature. But I think there is a bona fide occupation which is honorable. And it is this: to communicate as best you can the wishes and feelings of the President of the United States. And if we think that Donald Trump is a, you know, unfortunate president for us, you still need somebody to convey that information. And that's Sean Spicer. And I think he's suffering from guilt by association or, you know, antagonism by association. We don't like Sean because he's doing the impossible. He's trying to make sense of Donald Trump's tweets. It's just
right. He's
a thankless,
indefensible,
yeah,
really.
It's a thankless task. So if we had the previous press secretary who was voted by the press corps as the best press secretary of all time, I think we would still be frustrated with that guy because
absolutely,
he'd still be up there trying to say that the size of the crowd on the mall wasn't that large. And my son says this, Gene, I know you didn't ask, but I have to finish this thought.
Sure.
So then Griffin says, well, in that case, Sean Spicer, just for instance, day one, should not have defended the size of the crowd on the mall. But if he did, then he wouldn't be the White House press secretary anymore. They would have fired him and got somebody else to do it. So I think at the end of the day, that job is put the best spin you can on the president's views. And I think that's what Sean is trying to do.
Right. He's the stress secretary, really. Poor guy. He can't win.
That's,
I mean,
so true.
You know, and who in the world, I mean, think of it. He must have a longer fuse than many people.
I know that he hasn't popped. I don't know what it's like at home, but
God,
man,
yeah, I agree.
Thanks for the call.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Department of Justice, which may be involved in an ongoing investigation, and asking Congress as a separate body to look into something that
Sean Spicer does. He just
to look into something and add credibility to the look adds an element that wouldn't necessarily be there.
It's a difficult dance to do. There's no doubt about that. It's not an easy dance.
I think we've made it very clear.
It's also
how he wants this.
1:29. This is WGN. By the way, I've been monitoring the president's spokesperson Sean Spicer's daily White House press briefing. A moment ago, somebody said, "Sean, does the president believe?" Here's the quote. "Does the president believe that human activity has contributed to global warming?" They were asking him about when is the president going to make up his mind on the Paris Climate Accord. So they asked him, quote, "Does the president think that human activity has contributed to global warming?" And his response was, "I'll get back to you on that." I'm sorry, America, but that was your president and he still hasn't made up his mind. Or Sean Spicer just isn't sure. John Spicy is doing a very good job, says this texter, at one of the currently worst jobs in the United States. I pity him.
You know, there was a case not too long ago, a couple weeks maybe, where there was something came up, a question. He goes, well, we're going to look into that.
Yeah.
And then the next day or two, the reporter said, well, why didn't you tell us? You said you're going to look. He said, I said I was going to look into it. I didn't say I was going to tell you.
John, do you feel sorry for Sean Spicer? Really? He took the job, has decided to stay with it, and he will write a book about it someday. Yeah, I think, you know, whenever they do the books about the Bush and the Clinton and the Obama administrations, usually you need some time to lapse before everybody gets a clear perspective on it and something relevant is sort of tweezed out of it. I mean, really, the Bush administration and their execution of the war and Clinton, Obama, they've all got fascinating storylines. And you just need a little distance before everybody sort of tells their truth. Can you imagine how fascinating it is going to be?
Can we drop in here?
When Pence gets a chance to talk. Go ahead.
I gave an answer to Jim. The problem is that I think the president, to the question, gets frustrated when he sees fake stories get published, things that aren't based in fact, and a narrative gets pushed. With all due respect, I think when you see instances like that get perpetrated over and over again, that is frustrating. I didn't come here with a list of things, but I think that there's, thank you, I appreciate it. What you get to decide what's big and what's not. I think there's a lot of the stuff that has gotten pushed out based on unnamed, unaccountable sources that is very troubling. And I think when you see the same kind of thing happen over and over again, it is concerning. And I think the president has fought very hard to bring back jobs. You, as I mentioned, you had over $500 billion of investment that's coming in that's going to grow jobs, grow our economy. That should be a big story. The president's results when it came to fighting terrorism was a big thing. The idea that we're standing up a global center to fight extremism in Saudi Arabia that's uniting Muslim countries, that's a big deal.
Are you saying that reports that there's going to be an overhaul of the communications operation or fake news?
I know. So now you want to come back to that. What I'm telling you is that the reason that the president is frustrated is because there's a perpetuation of false narratives, a use of unnamed sources over and over again about things that are happening that don't ultimately happen. And I think that is troubling. Thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
So those last questions there were...
Kushner fake news?
Were about the...
Wait a minute, what was that
again? The idea that there might be an overhaul in the communications department.
Yeah, but is Kushner fake news, somebody shouted out, and everybody went, ooh.
Right, well, if you heard him there, and I'm sorry, I didn't hear everything going into it, but he talked about the fact that these quote-unquote fake news stories were getting more play than the major stories.
Directing the Department of Justice, for example. But again, I think we've made it very...
Here's his exit music.
You know, this reminds me, years ago when you were here and Jesse Ventura was on, and he was the governor of Minnesota at the time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you'll remember this.
No, I specifically remember this interview we did, if that's what you're about to bring up.
Yeah, and he was indignant because he said, you know, he would call reporters to some spot in Minneapolis where he wanted to highlight his donations to charity or something his government had done, and all they wanted to do was ask him questions about the scandals and things like that. And it was as if he could determine, like he just said, Spicer said, you get to decide what's news and what's not. Well, in many ways, reporters do. Just because you want to stand in front of some prop that you've, you know, set up doesn't mean that they're not going to ask you about the stories of the day. Do you remember that? And Ventura was all upset. Like, they won't even ask me about why I brought them here.
I also remember that when Ventura was in our studio talking about this. Was it a studio or was it a phone?
It was a studio, yeah.
Yeah, he was out with his book. I'm trying to remember now what the cause was, but people loved him. He was a breath of fresh air. People loved that he was going to stand up to the media or traditional politics and say, we're going to get things done, stuff like that.
Right.
But then he became very frustrated with the fact, I guess he was at the time, that he isn't able to set the narrative.
And that's exactly what they're doing here. You know, why aren't you talking about this and this and this? Well, the fact is, you know, the reporters were talking about the Saudi arms deal and all of that. They were talking about the Article 5 speech, but they were also talking about the sourced stories about Jared Kushner.
Is it any why is it a wonder to this president or to Sean Spicer that given the treatment they've given to the press, I know that the press hasn't treated them kindly, or they certainly feel that way.
I'd be more comfortable if you referred to us as the enemies of the people.
If the enemy of the people, given the sort of way the Trump administration has handled the press, did they think they were going to catch a break? I mean, I know these are professionals, but they're human beings. And here's Here's what happens when you just run people down over and over again. It gets harder for them to play nicely or fairly. Put it this way. The president thinks that this game is unfairly stacked against him. But what he hasn't realized yet is that that's the game. I'm amazed that he's not playing it better. When's the last time he threw the press a bone? When's the last time he said something nice or was helpful or was forthcoming? When's the last time he said, I made a mistake? Or, yeah, you guys got me on that. We shouldn't have done it that way. Good job.
How do you think he would do if he had a news conference? You know, he had that one news conference.
Yeah, what is it? It was epic.
It was epic. But they were very pleased with it. And it seemed to play, while some people were kind of taken aback, it seemed a lot of people thought he did a great job.
Yeah, certainly the, you know, Rush Limbaughs and the Sean Hannitys of the world said, now that was what the press deserved, a smackdown.
And I wonder how it would play out today. If he, it might serve him very well to do that.
Yeah, yeah. Instead of running poor Spicy out there. John Steve didn't. John Williams, you must have mentioned something about Jesse Jackson Jr.'s pension. I'd like to know, why is Jesse Jackson Jr.? Somebody a minute ago said, isn't it possible that Sean Spicer or any of these people that are in office and then out of the president's, you know, staff, are they going to collect huge pensions? We don't think so. But John, you mentioned something about Jesse Jackson Jr.'s pension. I'd like to know, why is he collecting $100,000 annually workman's comp and $38,000 disability? Do all release prisoners collect money? I think I know the answer to this, but you probably do better than I do, Steve. Why is Jesse getting $138,000?
Well, he was able to convince a court, I think, or a board, a labor board, that his illness was work-related, and so he's getting workman's comp for it.
Workman's comp.
Which is amazing. It doesn't happen very often at all. Very rare.
I believe there's a piece of legislation to try and eliminate his compensation, but I don't know how you do that. And again, when I think of all of it, I understand why that's annoying. But big picture is not that. And by the way, do you think that Jesse Jackson Jr. has some sort of mental health issue or did?
Sure, absolutely.
I do too.
But I don't know that it was brought on by
his work.
I mean, I think you have to, well, yeah, I was going to, I was, yes, I don't think it was brought on by his work.
Well, yeah, you know, evidently he convinced somebody.
Or I don't think it was differently. I don't think his work caused it. It might have been exacerbated or brought on by his work.
Yeah, yeah.
His work didn't create it.
There's one other text I just wanted to get to real quick. Hey, Steve Bertrand, didn't Michelle Obama's mother get a pension for being a nanny and watching her own grandchildren? That last caller was right. We need to monitor these pensions.
Come on,
Christine. We Googled that. Snopes says that's just not true.
Come on, people, when you hear these things, you have to stop and just think about, really, do you think this is possible?
It's been snoped. It's not true. It's 147. This is WGN. Let's pick up some phone lines, and let's also visit with Dan Lipman. So if you want to join us, the number is 312-981-7200. I'm John Williams. You're listening to WGN. We appreciate that. We were talking about Sean Spicer's job, the press conference that he just held, the daily White House press briefing, and their pushback from what they continue to say is fake news, in this case about Jared Kushner and all of these unnamed sources. Just one other observation about that, and Daniel Lipman joins us now from Politico. He covers the president. He's also been covering the Jared Kushner story for a while. Hi, Daniel. You're on WGN. How are you?
Good. Thanks for having me.
So they are unnamed sources. I wonder how realistic it is to hope or expect. Steve Bertrand, our news guy, is also here. If one of these unnamed sources would just allow themselves to be named, wouldn't that make all of this a lot easier?
They'd be out of work, for one thing.
Yeah, they would have to look for a new job.
And then you wouldn't get the story the next day.
Yeah, but I mean, shouldn't that be a concern of ours if this was going on? Is this a conversation that we should all be having every single day? We're following the development of this story from somebody saying something they're not supposed to be saying.
No, we're not. We're doing it from several people saying something they're not supposed to be, and that's the key.
Sorry,
when you hear the stories, I think the Kushner story, the Washington Post based it on six unnamed sources.
Yeah, I noticed they've been counting them.
So that means it wasn't one guy or one woman, with a reporter's ear. The reporter heard it from one, and then others verified it from five other people. That's a big difference. And you're not going to get people to say on the record some of these things. You know, sometimes they're hurtful. Sometimes, big picture, they may well be helpful.
But all right,
to the
but, but if you, all right, well, Daniel, what do you think about this?
I guess like I appreciate the concern a lot of readers and you know listeners have about anonymous sources, but you know you need people to tell you stuff that is embarrassing or is not just like a PR line. And so I know when I talk to an anonymous source in the White House, if they tell me something that is new or that I need a confirmation on, then you go to a second person, and then you go to the White House press office. And so it's not like reporters are making this stuff up. It's because things that are adversarial journalism, and I mean that in the best possible way, which is holding power accountable and telling readers what's really going on and what's behind the scenes, you need people who don't have their names attached to it, because if everyone's sources were named, then no one would have a job in Washington, D.C.
And also look at when one outlet breaks a story, look at how quickly all of the others follow up with it.
Independently verifying.
Independently, which what that means is that their sources, once it's out, if they weren't going to spill the beans initially, they're supporting it. They're saying, yeah, that's true. You know, it's very rare that you're seeing a major story being broken and it not being verified pretty quickly by other reputable outlets.
And none of the Washington Post and New York Times scoops on Russia and the investigation and Jared have really been shot down, because those publications know their credibility is on the line, and so they're going to bulletproof it. And they have the best reporters in the business covering the White House and the FBI. We have a ton of great reporters at Politico, too, breaking stuff. And so these are people that want to do the best jobs possible. And actually, there is so much White House intrigue and investigation so early on in this presidency that I think readers appreciate, and we're seeing that with record subscriptions at all the top publications. Readers like knowing what's really going on.
Yeah. Spicer said today that these unnamed sources, he says, well, it's an unnamed source. You know, there's no proof there. We don't even know who's saying it. Maybe it's somebody with an agenda. They cast these aspersions on any story that has unnamed sources, which is most of these stories. You've followed Kushner for a while. You've traded email with him. What do you think of these allegations that he tried to establish or cooperate with a back channel with the Russians?
You know, it looks a little, you know, like it was amateur hour. You know, Jared's a smart guy. He's not, you know, he doesn't know everything in the world. But it looks like both the Trump people and the Russians, they wanted this secure communication channel, because they thought that if they use normal channels or just, you know, then the Obama administration would listen in on what Trump might have said to Putin during the transition, even though those channels were never set up. And so I don't think it was a nefarious thing. It was just ham-handedness and kind of a lack of professionalism. And, you know, I don't think it's always the best idea to go to Russian facilities and so they can listen in on everything using, you know, Russian communications equipment.
I wonder how it actually would have been carried out, literally. So would a member of the Trump transition team go to some facility that the Russians control in Washington and put on headphones and then talk to somebody back in Moscow or talk to somebody in Washington, D.C.? What did they actually think was going to happen? Do you know?
That's the kind of the million-dollar question. We don't know, because those discussions didn't go as far as that. But you know, there are Russian consulate facilities in New York, and so maybe they could have brought some of the equipment over, or you know, Trump could have gone to you know, the Russian consulate and made, you know, phone calls. It doesn't look like this like grand. It doesn't seem like something out of a James Bond film with, you know, agents from the you know, NSA or the GCHQ, you know, setting this up. It seems like Trump told Jared, "Hey, I want to talk to Putin in a private manner. Can you help set that up?" I don't think this was Jared freelancing. And so, like, I don't, you know, Jared's smart enough to listened to what his father-in-law.
Okay, but if that's if that's the case, then I think that's another level of dereliction, then, don't you? If it came from the president-elect.
Yeah, that's the we haven't nailed that down because Jared is not going to tell the press, "Hey, Trump told me to do this."
Yeah.
So basically, they're shooting themselves in the foot by letting this drag on and harming Jared's reputation.
It's 2 o'clock. I got to run. Let's follow this story this week and the week after that and the week after that. All right, Daniel?
Yes, sounds good.
Appreciate your time. From Politico, Daniel Lipman.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Well,
here's John Williams.
I actually think we've already had about three, but who's counting? It's 2:07. We're here all the way until 3 o'clock. It's John Williams on WGN Radio. Hope you had a nice Memorial Day weekend. I painted a porch, which I really enjoyed doing, and got some ice cream at Sugar Shack in the Pilton neighborhood. Never been there before. Stood in the line. Finally got up there. Had a hot fudge sundae. That was a beautiful thing. Just wanted to finish reading that. Remember somebody, when we were talking about pensions, said, well, isn't it true that former First Lady Michelle Obama's mother, who lived with them for a while, was going to collect a pension of $160,000 for the rest of her life as being a nanny, and that the United States government was going to give her a pension for that? And then we looked it up on Snopes, because a lot of people believe that. Well, those Obamas.
Which is funny, because the fake news believers are believing in fake news. I mean, well, that's fake news.
It's actually about as good an example, as pure an example of fake news as you'll find. October 17th, 2016, Snopes writes, the Boston Tribune website published an article reporting that Marian Robinson, the mother of First Lady Michelle Obama, would be receiving a lifetime pension of $160,000 per year from the United States government for having served as caretaker to the first couple's children during Barack Obama's tenure in the White House. And then here's the story, blah, blah, blah. There's no truth to this report, Snopes writes, because for one thing, the Boston Tribune is a fake news site that masquerades as the online arm of a legitimate big city newspaper in order to lure readers with fabricated clickbait stories. So a blast goes out, Michelle Obama's mother to get $160,000 government pension for being nanny. And people say, oh, my God. And then they click through. But they don't pause to think, wait, is this true? And the site looks legit. The Boston Tribune is a fake site that masquerades. The article provided links to the general landing pages of the National Taxpayers Union, FOIA.gov, the Freedom of Information Act.gov site, the Civil Service Retirement System, but those links didn't point to any relevant information. So you know how it is. You go, look, they got all these links. Did you click through? Because the links oftentimes either go nowhere or they go to those landing sites, but they don't verify what the story is saying. But they know you're not going to look. You're too busy. You're too outraged that Michelle Obama's mother is getting $160,000 for life, and we're paying for it. We're not.
I don't have time to read it. I've got to post it.
I know. I've got to retweet it now. We started the show talking a little bit about the Bryce Harper slugfest. I wanted Mark Carman to come and answer a couple questions for us on this, and he's on a phone line right now. Hey, Carm, how are you?
John, I'm great. Good to be with you. Good to see you walking around over the weekend, by the way. I saw that wave, just so you know.
I live downtown now and will for about a month, still more. So I'm always walking by the various shows, and I just kind of peek in and wave. Steve Dale shuts his whole show down and then does a play-by-play of me, but you guys don't give me any love on the air when I come by.
Well, you were real quick on Sunday. It was you were there and you were gone, so
yeah.
I didn't want to interrupt your day. You seemed like something important was going on. Don't take offense, John. If you want, I'll stop the show for you on the weekends. We have no problem doing that.
No. Frankly, that you don't stop the show for me, I respect you even more. Love me some Steve Dale, but you guys were in the middle of something. Tell me what happened at this baseball game.
So, and this is a bizarre one, but this is also standard baseball on some level where baseball players are just very sensitive. We're talking about Hunter Strickland pitching for the San Francisco Giants against Bryce Harper, who hit two home runs against him in the divisional series in 2014. Harper, by the way, plays for the Nationals. Strickland plays for the Giants. Strickland's team, the Giants, won that series, won the World Series that year, and in both games, the Harper home runs off Strickland, the Giants won those games too. Hunter Strickland had not seen Bryce Harper since 2014, hadn't forgotten that he had hit homers and stared at him as they sailed into McCovey Bay and McCovey Cove. And he has the memory going, so, okay, I'm finally seeing Bryce Harper again, so I'm going to nail him with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball to the old rump.
Yeah, beamed him on the butt.
That's
with
what happened.
95, I thought I heard 98, but either way, it wasn't a curveball, was it?
95. Yeah. Still. No, 98, 95. 100% intent is the key. And you're right, 98. 98 years old. 98 miles per hour. Not years old. Thank you.
It's weird that he's not distracted when you walk by.
So here's the deal. So this goes back to when Harper hit the couple of home runs. But it wasn't that he hit home runs off him. That's fair. Was it the fact that Harper kind of hot-dogged it around the bases that this is all about?
Right, right. You can't enjoy yourself after you hit a home run in the playoffs in the seventh inning of an enormous game. You have to start running immediately with your head down, or baseball players like Hunter Strickland are going to remember for 3 years and try to, exact revenge. That's true. You're absolutely right, though, Johnny. He did not like how he reacted when he hit the home run. Well, the unwritten rules of baseball.
Who was it that a few years ago hit this gigantic home run in the playoffs? It might have been the World Series. And he sort of did a follow-through, watched the ball from the box. It was home run or something, and they win the game, something. And he had an elaborate follow-through and people were on his case about that. He did a bat flip, as I recall. Yeah, he did a bat flip.
Jose Bautista.
Talk about that.
Of the Blue Jays. That was a three-run homer in a phenomenal series with the greatest bat flip ever. And people freaked out that you can't watch it like that. I don't know. I mean, how you feel about this stuff, John. I enjoy entertainment in my baseball. And what ended up happening is that the next year, Bautista was sliding into second to Rougned Odor of the Rangers, and they ended up getting in a brawl. That was the revenge that was paid back on that one. But it was a 3-3 game in the seventh inning of the series there, and he launched a three-run shot, and the place went bananas, and everybody came out of the dugout, and Bautista took his time, and I thought that was awesome. What's wrong with some celebration in life? John, when you finish up this segment, if you like it, I think you should do a dance, and Elif should join you, and I think that's cool.
Right, so throw the headphones or spike them, walk around, preen a little bit, that sort of thing.
Bertrand should do a dance when he's done with his news. I mean, come on, let's enjoy our lives. We're not here for a long time. We're here for a good time, right?
Oh, hold on, I got to write that
down.
Actually,
I do dance after my news.
Not
Mark.
Here for a long time. Here for a good time. Oh, did you just make that up, or is that one that I missed?
No, that's wrong.
Really? Is that everybody? Why didn't you tell me about that one? Here for a good time. I'm going to start dropping that in the conversation. Go ahead and let me try it out. Hey, Steve, say something to me.
I'm sorry, John. What? I'm getting pulled in different directions.
That's
here.
Okay, Steve. Don't worry. I know you're busy. You're busy over there. But, Steve, you know, we're not here for a long time. We're here for a good time.
That's why you should be paying attention to the show, Bertrand.
That's okay. He's actually a newsman doing the news.
No, I know.
But here's the thing. I think that this, I mean, we're off on a tangent, but I'll finish this thought because I have thought about this a little bit. And I specifically remember it in the Bautista case. I thought that that was a genuinely remarkable moment with a remarkable performance. I mean, I just thought it was an honest reaction. It wasn't showboating or hot-dogging per se. I mean, I think you get to walk the walk when you've done something that extraordinary. So, it wasn't pure showing off. It was hitting an incredible home run and feeling the moment and going, yeah! I mean, are these athletes supposed to be robots? They have emotions. They react. That was an honest expression, I think. It wasn't just, purely taunting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
You and I are on the same page.
We are. We 100% are. And listen, it doesn't have to be pure joy, too. Like, some athletes will get cracked for, well, why is he crying? You know, I mean, well, listen, when you put so much into your craft and things don't go your way, sometimes, you know, your emotions are going to come out in that way, too. And the same thing, I think, on the joy end of the spectrum. Yeah, I mean, you know, so.
But in this case, but let's go back to this case at hand.
Yeah. Okay.
So there's Hunter Thompson. And in 2014, he gives up these home runs to Bryce Harper. It's pretty much 2017 everywhere now. So shouldn't he, like, was everybody expecting him to hit him or retaliate in some way? Or could he have just let that go?
Well, so, okay, so that's the key part of this, right? So you have, normally in these situations, you have a catcher who is going to protect the pitcher. I mean, Buster Posey probably jumps out right there and he grabs Bryce Harper so he doesn't allow him to have a run at his pitcher where he throws his batting helmet and punches him in the face, as it turns out. But Buster Posey didn't move, and no one on the Giants has defended the actions of Hunter Strickland. So I don't think he had any support from his teammates on this. And there were a bunch of teammates that were on that team in 2014. Posey was one of them. Brandon Belt, Brandon Crawford, Joe Panik were all on the same team. And none of them were coming to the defense of Hunter Strickland in the game or in the moment, Buster Posey. Now, some people are speculating that Strickland told Posey that he was going to hit Harper and don't stop him. Let him come out of me. I want to beat him up. I don't personally believe that, but that is a speculation out there. So,
well, do you think that Posey knew? Do you think Buster must have known, though, that he was going to hit him, right? I mean,
he
was framing the pitch inside. He called for a fastball and he framed it inside. Wasn't that wasn't a tell to you in some way?
You know, I mean, that does back up. I guess, I suppose he knew. I don't. I would think that if he knew he was going to throw at him, that it would have been a discussion and they would have been ready to defend him afterwards and even in the moment.
Right.
But, I mean, that's what I would think. But it is possible, the other side of it, that, hey, call for a fastball inside and this is all me. You have nothing to do with it. I will take the repercussions. I will take the suspension and if he's going to come out to me and want to fight me, then bring it on. I'm ready to go. I think that's equally believable, too. That's a 50-50 for me.
So if you were going to say who's more the instigator here or who's committed the bigger foul here, is it Harper for charging the mound and throwing his helmet, or was it Thompson for throwing that fastball? Who would you say is...
I have no problem with what Bryce Harper did. Listen, if you're going to throw at me, I am going to charge the mound, and I am going to try to hit you. And by the way, you should know that, Hunter Strickland. You should know that, the rest of baseball. So, you know, he's putting himself in harm's way. You throw a punch, you might end up breaking your hand, and that's not good for Bryce Harper or the Nationals. But I think Bryce Harper should be suspended for like a game, and Hunter Strickland should be suspended for 15, something like that.
That's amazing.
I mean, come on, 3 years.
Well, all right, yeah, 15 games would be later. Four starts, right? So he would miss four rotations if nobody's going to. He's not going to get suspended for 15 games, though, is he?
I think it's going to be 10.
Really?
At least 10.
And Harper, though, but do you think Harper will only get suspended for the one?
I think he'll get. No, I think he'll get. I'd say 3 to 5.
I mean, basketball doesn't cotton this anymore. You can't get off the bench. You can't. It's funny how all of the sports, like, you know, hockey encourages it and allows it. It's amazing, hockey's. Think about it. The difference between the NBA and the NHL and their attitude about fighting. It is verboten in the NBA. You just don't see guys throwing punches anymore. The best you get is some guys kind of tussling, but or maybe running into a pick too hard, but you just don't see it. And then hockey, it's the exact opposite. Baseball kind of allows it. Baseball lets you charge the mound and punch him in the face in the middle of a game.
If they don't wanted to stop it, they could say, listen, if you, like the NBA did, if you leave the bench, you get suspended. Because, you know, they had the malice in the palace with the Pacers and Ron Artest and the Pistons and going in the stands. And that was the end of that whole scene. They were not going to allow that anymore. And it's a lot more dangerous in basketball because something like that could happen. Although, I mean, that does remind me of when the Dodgers ended up going into the stands at Wrigley back in, I want to say, 98 or whatever it was. They went into the stands, and what that ended up doing was changing all the beer rules at Wrigley for the vendors, because I was a vendor back then, John. It cost me money. I'm still bitter. But, you know, the NBA doesn't stop it there. The ice hockey, I mean, the NHL could stop it too, but there's part of the league that thinks that they need to have the fighting. Baseball, they don't want it, but they haven't gone to the level of saying you can't come out of the dugout, you're instantly suspended. So I guess they are complicit in that way. Hunter Strickland too, John. I mean, this guy's a reliever. So I mean, if they suspend him, it's going to be more painful for him because he won't be, you know, practice to start every 5 days. He's available all the time. So
cost him more money. Hey, you got one more minute, Carm?
Yeah.
Mark Carman's on the phone. Hold on one second there. A couple of questions and comments for you, including a Rizzo observation from Tom. Tom, stay there. We're talking to Mark Carman, WGN Radio Sports, a little bit about the Bryce Harper, Hunter Thompson fight yesterday. You may have seen it. If not, you might want to watch it because it's thoroughly entertaining. Were any of them injured, by the way, in that fight? Do we know?
Were any what? I'm sorry?
Were either of them, and the fight, by the way, was one punch each of which landed. Was anybody injured in that fight?
No injuries. My favorite, though, was Hunter's getting taken off the field by four San Francisco Giants, and he's just continuing to try to fight his way back on the field as they pretty aggressively took him all the way back to the clubhouse, where I'm sure he went bananas. They're like, get out of here, buddy. You are done for the day. You're not going to do anything more to embarrass yourself. At least that's how I saw it.
Bryce, though, was kind of cool. After he threw his punch, he sort of laid back. He didn't further instigate anything, did he?
Bryce, I just respected the way he went about it. He had his complete blow up, and then when it was done, he was like, okay, that's it. Like, I just expressed my emotion on that, and okay, I'll move on. And then he actually complimented Hunter after the game, saying, well, I'll say one thing about him. At least he didn't throw it in my head. It was a very accurate fastball at my butt.
Boy, that's a funny code in baseball, isn't it? I respect the way you did it, even though I tried to take your head off with my helmet and then tried to beat you up on the field. But props to you for the way you handled yourself out there. That's funny.
Right.
Tom had a question or a comment. Hey, Tom, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Thanks, John. Real quick, I would advise Mr. Harper to watch some tapes of Anthony Rizzo, how to act like a man when you're hit, since he leads the league by being hit by pitches this year. He just walks it first and doesn't rub it. He just smiles at the pitcher. That's how you act, like a man. Not that baby stuff of Russian pound. Okay, that's my comment.
Thanks for the call. By the way, I've also been crediting Hunter Thompson, who's a famous writer who smokes cigarettes on a, I believe, a long holder. I think that's Hunter Thompson. This would have been Hunter Strickland, if I'm not mistaken. He didn't throw it.
Yes.
So you feel free to correct me when I kind of go off the deep end there.
I did a couple times, John, but you just kept going. So I just started calling him Hunter.
That's because I wrote it down wrong. I literally have in front of me Hunter Thompson so that I know I'll get it right. So give me credit for that. All right. Well, when are we going to hear you on the radio again then, Mark?
I will. I'll be back this weekend, John, for the beat. Saturdays 4 to 7, Sundays 3 to 6. Although I think I might be off on this Saturday because I have yet another wedding, so I'm going to be forced to miss Saturday's show. I've not communicated that to upper management yet, so I'll have to make an email.
Was that you that was complaining last weekend about being invited to a wedding, and then you have a plus one? And then the wedding couple called and said, hey, listen, it's a little tight, so could you come without the plus one? Was that you?
That was not me, and I don't believe that story is exactly accurate to how it was told.
Oh, I believe that's how it was told.
Are you saying that Hunter S. Thompson has it wrong?
All right, I'll stop trying to remember things. I'm hanging up the phone now. Bye, Mark.
See you guys.
That's Mark Harmon. 2:35, one other story that we just kind of noticed today, and maybe you did too. Do you remember this scene from the movie Love Actually, where Hugh Grant plays the British Prime Minister? Billy Bob Thornton is the President of the United States. He's a bit of a rogue. There's a little Clinton in the Billy Bob Thornton, President of the United States. And they've had their meetings. President of the United States character's kind of hit on the assistant to the British Prime Minister. He not only doesn't like that, but he doesn't like the way the president has been talking and treating Great Britain. But instead of accommodating and, you know, recognizing the sovereignty of all-powerful United States, the Hugh Grant character finally decides, no, I'm gonna tell him how I really feel.
Mr. President, has it been a good visit?
Very satisfactory indeed. We got what we came for. And our special relationship is still very special.
Prime Minister?
I love that word, relationship. It covers all manner of sins, doesn't it? I fear that this has become a bad relationship. A relationship based on the President taking exactly what he wants and casually ignoring all those things that really matter to Britain. We may be a small country, but we're a great one too. A country of Shakespeare, Churchill, the Beatles, Sean Connery, Harry Potter, David Beckham's right foot, David Beckham's left foot, and a friend who bullies us is no longer a friend. And since bullies only respond to strength, from now onward, I will be prepared to be much stronger. And the President should be prepared for that.
The signature soaring music. Now the crowd of reporters know they've got something. And, oh, Mr. Great scene.
That's happening this week in France, I think.
Okay, so here's a couple of sound bites for you along those lines then. We'll go to Vladimir Putin's, because on the 300-year anniversary of something happening in France, Macron invites Vladimir Putin to come to the Palace of Versailles. And so there they are. I've been in that room. It's ornate. It's beautiful. It's just gorgeous. And it's ancient, right? I mean, it's 300 years old. That's ancient for us. I don't know how old it is, but it's been there for a while. And the two of them are standing there at the podiums. And, you know, they both spoke. They were there for like a half an hour or so, even more, talking. And at first, the thrust of it was, you know, we need to work together. These great nations need to come together. But then they sort of got on each other's nerves when questions started coming from the crowd. Like, they were asking Putin right out of the gate. It's nice to see that the American media isn't the only ones that they'll ask the questions they're interested in, not the ones you're interested in. Putin was not there to talk about election meddling. But the Russians are accused of meddling in the French election, too. And the whole world's paying attention to this U.S. election controversy. So the first question asks him about this. And Putin, through a translator, wants to dismiss the whole thing. He said, no, this didn't even come up.
The meddling of Russia in the elections of foreign countries, we haven't discussed that question. And President Macron has shown no particular interest in that question. So we haven't discussed it. So as far as I'm concerned, this question doesn't even exist.
Macron is standing right there. And Putin just said it didn't even come up and that this isn't an issue. It doesn't exist. So now Macron's got to say something.
Russia Today and Sputnik have been influential outlets that have, several times, spoken mistruths about me and my campaign. That's why they were not invited to my headquarters. All media, including Russian, had access to my campaign. Russia Today and Sputnik have not behaved as media outlets and journalists, but as organs of influence and false propaganda.
And Putin was standing right there, and Putin did not like that. Putin was... He had kind of a sour look on his face. There were a couple of other instances about other issues where Macron was just like, you know, I really don't care. I'm just going to say what I think now. Did you get that sense that I did from
that
whole
absolutely.
Press conference?
And it was the same with the, we were laughing, weren't we, about the Trump handshake. And he kind of copped to the fact, like, yeah, I wanted to make a point. I wasn't going to let go. I wasn't going to be
sort
of coward.
Macron said that symbolism matters, even in a small gesture like that. And so he did shake Trump's hand.
Like an arm wrestler.
Yeah. He said, I'm not going to be, you know, the little guy here. I'm going to send a signal that we're not going to be had. And so I shook it longer and harder. And now they're still talking about the dang handshake. Not just because of that, but because of Donald Trump's own odd body language issues. Florin Dalkos, who is a psychology professor at the U of I, calls Trump's handshakes a quote-unquote tactical move. He said, why does he want to do that? I don't know. It looks to me like he's trying too hard with his body language. The president's fierce handshake has made headlines in the past, starting with the grasp of the Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's hand. That one lasted for a famous 19 seconds. I've read 18, but 18 or 19 seconds. That one was weird. And then remember Abe's expression afterwards. He kind of sat back in his seat like, holy cow, I thought that would never end. Did you see that? That was Abe's look. And then, of course, you had the one with Neil Gorsuch, and you had the one with the vice president, where he tries to physically and rhetorically sort of take people off balance. But Macron sees this coming, so he's not going to have that. He really gave it to Trump. But you know what I wanted Trump to do is, it would have been comical, but I mean that's not President Trump's first gesture. It's not his first thought. He doesn't think like this. But what if after the Macron handshake, Trump grabbed his hand and went, wow, ow, and kind of shook it, you know, like this. Oh, it would have gotten a big laugh. Everybody would have said, oh, we get it. I mean, think of how many points that would have scored if Trump would just go, oh, wow, holy cow, fella, now that's a handshake. It would have diffused the moment, and it would have it kind of would have been a little, taken a little of the air out of the Macron balloon.
Would have been self-deprecating humor.
It would have been that. Wow, you squeezed my hand harder than you hurt me. Trump's not. I don't think that's in his
skill set.
He doesn't have that bone.
Now, did you see they made much of Macron and Trudeau's bromance during the summit?
I did see that.
And And Prime Minister Trudeau did a similar thing at the White House, didn't he? He was pretty forceful in his handshake.
Boy, if you're the next person that has to shake Donald Trump's hand, I mean, you've got to have a strategy. You know, Hillary actually, there was a story a couple of weeks ago, Hillary Clinton actually worked out at some time with her staff how to handle the stage moment if during one of the debates Donald Trump reached out to embrace her. So now what do I do? And how does this work? And how does it look? And how do I avoid it? They worked on that.
And she goes, don't touch me, in the practice session.
Oh, really? Is that what she says to them?
Yeah.
Well, it devolved into fun, into humor. But yeah.
Right, yeah. But, I mean, it came from a place of seriousness. I mean, you wonder if the president is starting to think about that himself. I noticed at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier that he laid the wreath this weekend, and then he embraced the mother of a soldier who had lost his life or her life. And I think everybody watches his body language, and he handled that moment delicately and appropriately. He handled that one fine. Whew, said his staff. By the way, Steve, so I think if you took the Love Actually scene and you mixed it up with the Macron-Putin scene, it would go like this.
Mr. President, has it been a good visit?
President Macron has shown no particular interest in that question. As far as I'm concerned, this question doesn't even exist.
Prime Minister?
Russia Today and Sputnik have not behaved as media outlets and journalists, but as organs of influence and false propaganda.
It doesn't work as well, but
that's not bad.
That's kind of the idea.
Did you see the updated Love Actually for Red Nose Day last week?
As I was grabbing those sound bites, I saw the link, but I didn't click through. What's that?
It's like they did a 15-minute where they caught up with where the characters are now. And it was a benefit for...
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
And so they tell us where everybody is.
Where most of the people
are. Do you
are.
Remember how that played out?
Did you watch? You know, it's just such a special thing. I wouldn't want to ruin it for anyone. Let's just say I was tearing up on the train. Love that movie.
I have only... I think I've told you this before, but only recently have I discovered via my kids that there are those of us who love the movie Love Actually, and there are those who dislike that movie. And that's a real thing out there. You know, do not get married or go to somebody's Thanksgiving dinner if you don't know where they are on Love Actually, because that can be a deal breaker. And the problem with me is I'm so naive. I'm such an easy mark. I watched that movie. I just thought it was so wonderful. There's only one storyline I didn't like. I was watching it the other night, and I'm going, well, this is...
You were watching it the other night?
Yeah, I was on cable. Welcome to America. I got 900 channels. And so I'm watching it the other night. There wasn't a game on.
Right, okay.
And so I thought, oh, I'm clicking, clicking, clicking. I go, oh, Love Actually. I like that movie. Now I'm watching it, and now I'm hearing its detractors in my head. And they're starting to take away my enjoyment of this film. I go, oh, they got a point there. This is a stupid scene, or that character's preposterous, or this isn't working. And so it's unfortunate.
Which one? Which line? Do you remember?
Well, every single one of them they're critical of. My favorite storyline in there, I would say there are two, but certainly the one where the guy is riding and he has the Portuguese maid.
Colin Firth.
Yeah, I just love that storyline.
And they return.
People. Do they? And what are they? And they're married. He's a best-selling novelist now. They've got kids, huh? They're just adorable.
We see Liam Neeson and his son.
Nice.
Prime Minister returns.
That's so nice. Is he married to his assistant?
I just am not going to do it. too special.
Ed, you're on WGN. What can I do for you? Ed, hi.
Hi, John. I see you're on the radio again. The handshake between Macron and Trump reminded me of the handshake in The Quiet Man between John Wayne and Victor McLaughlin. Where Ward Bond, the priest, tells him to shake hands, and Victor McLaughlin goes, oh, I'll shake his hand, and reaches in to grab it, and John Wayne grabs it back real hard and says, a nice grip you got there, Danaher. You know, and they're both, like, fighting each other for handshakes. It's a real comical scene.
Oh, wow.
In the beginning of the movie, if you ever see that, The Quiet Man is quite a favorite of mine. But
Quiet Man, yeah, you know what? I don't know that scene, but I guarantee I'm going to go look for it now. That's classic, it sounds.
It's in the beginning, yeah. Okay.
Thanks for the phone call. Yeah. All right, Pilgrim. Thanks for the call. That was my John Wayne, by the way, for those of you keeping score. Ken wanted to jump in. Hey, Ken, you're on the air. What can I do for you?
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm good. What's on your mind?
Listen, with Donald Trump, you know, he should hire somebody like My Fair Lady play and how to teach how to shake hands and how to speak. It just came to my mind, like My Fair Lady, she had a tutor, how to be a lady. And Donald Trump needs somebody to be a tutor to him.
Yeah. You know,
how to speak.
He's 70 years old, and I think he likes how he speaks and shakes hands. I'm guessing. I don't know. But it would be interesting because they do coaching for politicians and CEOs.
Right.
They have to be amenable to it. And maybe the 70-year-old who's been elected president doesn't think he needs anybody's help. But if they could just set up a video and go, okay, now watch the Japanese prime minister's face after the handshake. Okay, we're going to work on that.
Well, no one has taught him that. No one has taught him that because he's been his own man, so to speak.
It's a shame. That's what I've said this before, and I think I'm going to say it as long as is necessary, Ken, but I thought that's what Ivanka was there for. I thought she had an office in the West Wing to help her dad with some of these social graces, some of these miscues.
Now, he's his own man. That's the problem.
I'm afraid so. All
right. Okay, John.
Thanks for the call, Ken. I appreciate you joining us. Yeah, you haven't heard the last conversation about the president's body language and demeanor. And some people say, oh, well, this is just so silly. We should be talking about health care and taxes. And we should. But you know what? We actually do. And there hasn't been much news on that front of late anyway. There was a story in the New York Times. Was it the fashion section? Was it the Sunday magazine? There was a story in the Sunday New York Times, though. And it was about Melania's clothing that she wore on the big trip they just got back from. And how well she performed, if you will, with her attire. And the fashion writer who is writing about this says, rather than just marginalize or say that this is all trivial, the way we dress every day, the way the first family dresses, is always a statement. It's always a means of communication. And we have a multitude of ways to communicate. The president prefers social media. He likes the rally as opposed to the press conference. He lets Sean Spicer and Kellyanne Conway talk for him at times. He has his preferred modes of communication. But the way he dresses every day is also a measure of communication. It's a boxy suit with a white shirt and almost always a solid red or a solid blue tie. Sometimes one with a little bit of a stripe, but nothing too creative there. And it's saying something. Even if it's saying I'm just the president and I don't want to be too flashy, the length of the tie, I've never been able to sort of discern what that's all about. But he's clearly making a decision. And clearly the First Lady was too, both with whose clothes she was wearing and how they looked and the way she wore them. Lord, she looked spectacular every single photo. You will not find a bad picture of Melania on that trip. A conversation has come out of the one jacket she was wearing that cost $52,000. A family median income was equivalent to the price of the First Lady's jacket that she wore for a day or two on this trip. I don't have any problem with that. I mean, but anyway, the point is, I think that the clothing that the First Family wears is open for discussion. That's fair game. Don't read too much into it, but don't just say that that's irrelevant. And the same is true, I think, for the president's body language. There's the danger of maybe reading too much into it, but it is not irrelevant. Something is going on there. About that 50-some-odd thousand-dollar jacket that she was wearing, it was beautiful. If you've got $1 billion, and I think they do, and you want to spend $51,000 on a jacket, I don't think that's a fair criticism at all. They can spend their money any way they want. And if you look that good in it, you might want to get two. By the way, I just want to do a shout out. Anna DeVlantis has walked in. Rokan has the day off. And your Mr. Brady is going to join you today. Hi, Pat. How are you?
Pat Brady is here with us.
Thanks. But before we get rolling, I just want to do a shout out to Violetta Podramatic, who was on the bike to drive.
We heard.
She was bragging it up, not yet owning a bicycle. So, and I was giving her grief on Friday because I'm going, you're not going to do that. Well, danged if she didn't tweet out a picture of herself.
Brand new sparkly bike.
She bought a darling bicycle that completely matches her. Violetta, you look terrific in your new bicycle.
Thank you. It's a Schwinn. Yeah. I hear that's a good bike.
It's a Made in America bicycle.
Yeah. Chicago-based.
Baby blue. Yeah.
And we heard you look like Audrey Hepburn out there, all dressed up somehow, looking all together, even though you did the bike, the drive.
Yeah. Wow, thank you.
So it was well done. Yes. What are you guys doing?
Well, we've got Governor Rauner here with us today to talk about why we're 700 days without a budget.
It's Pat Brady.
Oh, Pat Brady's here, too.
Okay.
Who also would like to...
I thought you were confusing him with that. Do you want to be governor?
We're both billionaires. No, I'd rather be a billionaire.
Yeah. He's a supporter of
And if you were a billionaire, would you run for governor? Hell no!
Seems like that's what it takes these days, though, doesn't it, in order to run for office? More than $50 million.
Yeah.
But the governor will be here as there are protests and marches in Springfield right now trying to urge legislature to get something done on this 700th day without a budget. So we got that. Tom Skilling.
Nice to hear him, yeah.
We'll be with us as well. And listen to this. Did you ever play Candy Crush, John? Were you a fan of the addictive, highly addictive app game, Candy Crush?
I know of it. I never played it. I had an adult friend my age who, a female, mind you. She didn't fit the demographic. She was into that game.
Did she keep inviting you and inviting you? Please play Candy Crush.
I used to get invites all the time.
A lot of people did. Yeah. $2 billion upwards of that company made on Candy Crush. But now an Illinois plaintiff wants to get some of that money back, saying that they're owed money for the lives they paid for or earned but disappeared.
Wow. So you're going to talk to this person or about that?
Really? We're talking to a lawyer who has this case, and Judy has told us she may want to join the plaintiffs in this case.
I love Candy Crush.
I did, too, for a little bit there.
Had a really good show, ladies.
Very, very annoying.
Yeah. Ooh, you're annoying or the game is annoying, Judy?
John, the game.
Sorry.
How dare you?
Sorry, I know.
Walk of Famer, Judy Pilak.